Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning there. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. I think we're going to have a very exciting Saturday special today. The subject matter will be the Unlawful Internet Gambling Act, and we'll see what happens. I think it should be a controversial subject. You're welcome to call in, and we will get started here real quickly right after we play our intro promotion. Didn't they cut a promo spot for this yesterday, Mike? Can you find that and run that for the folks before I get into the show? And if you can't, that's fine. I'll take off. You know, folks.
I think it's ready to go.
Okay, hit it.
In the USA, every American is guaranteed life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. For some, happiness is taking risks. Parachuting, hang gliding, bungee jumping. Maybe a risk for you takes on a more financial twist, grabbing a scratcher at the corner store, or even investing on Wall Street. But some Americans choose to take their risks online, in the form of online gambling. 23 million Americans take part in this 21st century phenomena. But their fun is about to run out. On Friday, October 13th, President Bush signed a bill that might extinguish the flame that is online gambling. Join us this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon with special guest host Vernon Bohr and guest Jeffrey Dobrin, an attorney from St. Louis, as they discuss the legality of online gambling. That's this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon on your When You Roll Snake Eyes and Your Craps Hit the Fan radio stations, KSCO, KOMY.
Okay, folks, you know, Mike, could you see if you could get Jeff on? I called Rick. Apparently he called in while we were at the top of the hour news break, and no one picked up. So if you can try and call Rick and get that in the works. I don't have my guest yet, folks, so I'll just start off the show without him. And if we don't get him, we'll have a great show anyway. So as I was going through my notes last night, one of the things that I thought that I'd open the show with is if we're going to talk about gambling, internet gambling, and the law that was just passed, I need to tell you some of my gambling history. So my gambling history is actually fairly sparse. You know, I, like most people, grew up when I turned 21. I certainly went to Vegas a couple times. I've been to Vegas. I've been to Reno. I've been to Tahoe. I don't know. I don't know if I've gambled more than 5 to 10 times at those places in my entire life. And for what it's worth, in my entire gambling career, I am pretty much ahead on money. Been just lucky. I have been to a couple of Indian casinos. I played bingo at them. I play slots. I'm not a big slot player. One of the things about slots, if you play them, they're money eaters. So that I've developed a methodology. If I'm going to play slot machines and gamble that way, I only put in my money once a minute. 60 bets an hour, if you want to call it that way. And for the most part, gambling is legal in the United States in a variety of places. And I don't think I would not consider myself addicted to gambling, if you want to put it that way. Certainly haven't gambled that much. Well, recently, I got turned on to an online gambling site that was actually, everything was free. It was a free gambling site, and they had tournaments. And they would have 8 tournaments a day called Daily Qualifiers. And if you placed in the top 20 in the daily qualifier, you could go on and play in a weekly qualifier, which if you placed in that one in the top 10, usually about 1,000 or so people played in that one, you had an opportunity to play to win real money at no cost to you. Okay? So, My gambling history there was no money. I would play the weekly daily qualifier, and I would play it until I qualified in the top 20. That's what it took, and that was the end of my gambling for the week until the weekly qualifier came up on Sundays, and then I would play that tournament. The best I've ever done in that one is come in about 63rd place out of about 1,000 people. So, you know, we can go down the road in this show about the morality of gambling, but I really, you know, and I will deal with a certain amount of that because there are legitimate concerns by people, you know, whole, you know, social issues groups have talked about this and applauded this this decision and this act that was signed into law on Friday by the president. From moral grounds, I don't personally, that's not particularly where I want to go, but I will not ignore that issue for those listeners that want to discuss that. I have some very, very strong feelings about that, but and we'll deal with it. Jeff, is that you? Are you there?
That's me. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing very good. I want to thank you for being my guest. So at this particular point, I'm going to introduce my guest, and then I'll continue on my monologue. You probably didn't get a chance to hear it. Jeff, what I was doing is I was telling the people my gambling history, okay?
Okay.
And because I think it's germane to the subject matter, I also went on to say that although we could deal with this issue of the unlawful Internet Gambling Act that was just signed into law on a moral basis, that's not particularly the direction I want to go, although I'm willing to field a few questions like that, okay? So okay. You're pretty much up to speed there. And I was telling them about my current online Internet gambling history, which involved one of the sites, which I'm not going to give them play right now because they're not allowing people to gamble there anymore. But it was a free site, one of the top ones. Actually, I'll tell people, it was Titan, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
And Titan has locked out all American players, and why, I don't know. But I went on to let the audience, listening audience, know that I ran across Titan, and all the tournaments there were free that I played in. They have
they've locked you out even of the free play.
Yeah.
Titan.
Yes, okay. They have. Yes, they have. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I went on to say is for those that would morally say that you shouldn't spend your money, here I am, an American citizen, that I would play the daily qualifiers, right? I'd make the top 20 and go on and play the weekly qualifier in the hopes of getting in the top 10 to play the money game, which also costs you no money. Is that correct?
I don't know Titan all that well, but lots of sites have a free roll system where if you win one, you go to the next, you go to the next, you can actually win a decent amount of money without ever spending anything.
So I was playing last week, and I only made it out of 1,040 players. I probably made it to position 400 that day. I've been up as high as the 63rd, and for what it's worth, my wife was playing last week and made it to the top six.
Wow.
Which is not bad out of 1,040 players.
Yeah.
And so I went to sign up for a daily qualifier, you know, to get prepared for this weekend. A little bit of entertainment for me in Titan, you know. They didn't accept the registration. It kept saying tournament's canceled and no one was signing up. And so I sent them an email. And they says, oh, we're sorry. We can't let you sign up because you're in the United States and they passed a law. I says, what law did they pass? And I started to do some research on it, and I found out that the legislature had started this thing sometime in July. And I'm going to turn this over to you shortly, okay? And the House had passed a version of the law, but everything I found on the Internet had said that the Senate was not going to do anything with it. And then, lo and behold, it's passed, and I go on the Senate webpage, and I can't find anything on the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. But I do find something on the Port Security Act. So I finally pull it up, and that's where they tacked it in. So in the process of starting to look at all this and the ramifications, I came across Jeff's blog here. Jeff did an analysis of the law, which was very interesting. And so I thought, what better person to have on here than an attorney that's looked at the law and start to deal with and grapple with it. Now, folks, one of the places that I come from is I think that people in the United States have a right to spend their money where they want to. So, Jeff, what I want you to do is introduce yourself, and then we're going to start to get into the law itself and the ramifications and how it affects people and whether it's right or wrong. And I have some questions in the legal realm for you. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself since I didn't get a chance to get in touch with you yesterday?
Sure. Well, my name's Jeff Dobran. I actually went to law school out here in St. Louis at St. Louis University. graduated in 2003 and passed the Missouri bar in October 2003 following graduation. Actually did a little bit of contract work after that and ended up practicing here in St. Louis as a plaintiff's attorney for a little over a year, mostly in St. Louis County. Accepted a job working for an insurance company at the beginning of this year. So I'm not actually practicing in the plaintiff's field anymore, which was basically my choice. I think that practicing was it was cutting in my poker time, I guess.
So are you an addict then, Jeff?
Yeah, and I'm definitely a poker player. I started playing poker. I sort of caught the Chris Moneymaker syndrome. I watched, as I was supposed to be studying for the bar in 2003, I was watching a lot of the World Series on ESPN. And I caught the bug. I'd already seen rounders at that point, and I was always intrigued by poker, but now I knew you could play online. And, I didn't have a lot of time in law school to go to the casinos. There's actually no poker room here in St. Louis at that point anyway. And I started to play online. I started to play with some computer simulations and other things, and I, really got hooked. Made my first deposit, I think, in 2004. Started playing on a bunch of different sites, and really, for me, it's been slightly profitable, but for me, it's really more about fun. And that's why I've kept a close eye on this particular act. This has been something that Congress has been interested in passing, or at least certain members of Congress have been interested in passing for at least the last couple of years. And from what I understood, I don't follow politics all that closely, but I always understood the same thing that you did, Vernon. It was that the House, maybe they had enough votes to get it through. But the Senate, there was basically no way. It was my understanding that most of the gambling lobby had concentrated on the Senate. They didn't have a lot of money to spend. They concentrated on the Senate. It was really never going to get through. And in fact, it was dead as of a few weeks ago. There's plenty of articles on the net that you could see that the act really had no chance of passing. But then, the last day before they went on recess for the elections, there's a blurb that Friday night. I was actually playing a little bit. I saw a little blurb saying that, Senator Frist was trying to attach this to the Port Act. It concerned me, but most of the stories I read said still it's not likely to be successful. But I knew that the Port Security Act was an important piece of legislation. They really wanted to get it passed before the recess. And what do you know, it actually passed without much controversy on either side of the aisle. A lot of people want to blame either Republicans, or mostly people want to blame Republicans for the act, but unfortunately Democrats didn't really do much for it either. I think everyone wanted to go home. It was literally, I think it was 1 a.m. actually on Saturday when they passed this, Washington time. The Port Act really needed to get signed. It was a national security issue. And no one wanted to go home without that getting passed. It was attached to it. I think it basically went through without really much opposition on either side. So at that point, I had already read a version of the act, but this version that passed was slightly different. So I went through that evening and looked to see how bad the act was, and what I found was that it was pretty bad from the perspective of me, someone who wants to play poker online. And I was immediately concerned that what we were dealing with was something that might just kill the industry. So at that point, I sort of went through and did my analysis on the blog, and that's where we are.
Well, I actually found another attorney that did an analysis very similar to yours, and I want to read something at the onset here off their post. They say the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 was rammed through Congress. They say the Republican leadership, you said, didn't have much to do, other than Frist got it on the bill, I think, in the final minutes before the election period recess. According to Senator Frank Lautenberg, no one on the Senate House Conference Committee had even seen the final language of the bill.
Right. Well,
folks, that's part of what really sparked me to do this show, because we all know that Congress tacks things on. They add pork to bills. But I went and I pulled up the Port Security Act, and there is not even one attempt, not even a feeble, minor attempt to relate this to any sort of security in the United States. They just tacked it on. It's just right. Slapped in there. And the first thing that came to my mind is how dare they in this free country, whether you agree with the fact that Jeff likes to play poker, and he said that just a second ago that you started playing when you were studying for your bars, did you just watch it on television then?
Yeah, I was actually just watching at that point, and I didn't actually deposit until after I'd already become licensed. 2004 is when I started playing a little bit on a couple of the sites.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I'm thinking the arrogance for a Congress to decide how adults should and can be able to spend their money. You know, you're an adult. I assume you're over 21.
Yes, sir.
Can you practice law in your state if you're under 21?
Yeah, I suppose you could, but you also have to have a law degree, and that makes it slightly difficult to be 21.
And do it.
Under 21. Right.
So you are an American citizen over the age of 21 who enjoys playing poker. And if I understood you correctly, you haven't particularly gotten rich on it, but I also got the sense that it has not driven you to the poorhouse, that you're not looking for liquor stores to rob or to get money to play poker, and you enjoy it as entertainment. Is that correct?
No, that's exactly correct, yeah.
And now you have a legislature that passed a law that prohibits you from doing that, and they didn't even do it authentically and honestly. Now, folks, I want you to listen to something, by the way. I understand there are a lot of people out there that think that poker is a sin, a vice, and all this and that stuff. But if your legislature can tax something on the end of a bill that way that's totally unrelated to it, they can tax something onto bills that you don't like as well. And we live in a free country where people have the right to make these decisions themselves. Right, Jeff?
I like to think so. You know, another thing that's interesting to note about this is that it never, the actual act itself, and by the act, I'm going to use that as sort of the shorthand because the name of the act is so it's clumsy. But the act itself wasn't really discussed either. I mean, it was tacked on and then it was voted on. So it was never brought forth for discussion before the vote, which is disturbing also.
So what our legislature did, now, I'm sure there are people out there, I know some of you that probably gamble or play online, that this affects you and you might not want to come out of the closet regarding it. And I'm sure that I got listeners and people I know in the community that are going, oh, my God, you know, Vernon, V-cubed here, he's a gambler. He's going to the hot place, you know. But the fact of the matter, folks, is when your legislature does stuff like this, there's something just wrong with this. Now, we're going to get into the act in a second. We're going to do probably a couple things. We're probably going to have to take a commercial break here in a second, Jeff, and now would be a good time to do it. But what I want to leave the listening audience with for a second here before we go to the break, for all of you that are judgmental about people that gamble online like Jeff here, and by the way, as I told you, I haven't gambled any money online. Mine's strictly been play, okay? I don't have any problem with people gambling money online. I just haven't done it, okay? I've done what they call the free rolls. And Congress's act has stepped on my toes and my ability to do that. But I want to ask you, if you're an avid snow skier, my understanding, I haven't snow skied in years, the cost of a lift ticket these days is around $100 a day. Do you snow ski, Jeff?
I don't, no.
So if you were to go, I used to go to Mammoth all the time when I was younger. If I wanted to go for a weekend of skiing, it could easily today cost me $400 to $500 is my understanding. And that would be my entertainment. At the end of the weekend, when I'd skied, I would have no more to show than someone that sat down and decided to go on the internet and gamble their money for fun and entertainment. So I want you to think about that as we go on this commercial break and tell me what the difference between the two is. So our telephone numbers are 479-1080. The fax is 475-2967. After the commercial break, we'll start getting into the law. And as I say, my name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube, on the Saturday special, and we will be right back. So just hold on there, Jeff, okay?
Sure.
We'll be right back with you. Okay, let's play some commercials here.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and I and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
Climb a mountain, fish a stream, hike a trail, live your dream, play a sport, ski a slope or lake. We get outdoors for adventure's sake. Outdoor World gives you more adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
Outdoor enthusiasts know that the best clothing works equally well in the backcountry or the backyard. We carry jackets and vests, fleece or down, silk thermal sweats, and lots more. You could say our fall clothing is where urban styling meets out in the middle of freaking nowhere performance.
It's never boring. Set up camp and go exploring around the campfire when day ends with your family or friends. Outdoor World gives you more adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
Dogs, like cats, take the path of least resistance. So why don't you stop resisting? Tune in to Kitty's Animal Talk, Sundays at 2 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO. Or check us out on the web at KSCO.com. That's Kitty's Animal Talk, Sundays 2 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree Service. We offer dumpster rentals, tree work, demolition, and free estimates. For any of these services, please go ahead and call my office and either talk to Regina or Naomi at 763-2391. Thank you.
Are trees around your house looking strange, leaning in the wrong direction, blocking your sunlight, in danger of falling? Take care of this and call us, the professionals, Community Tree Service. We're licensed, insured, and we offer free estimates and are ever ready in emergency situations. We take pride in being reliable and will accommodate your needs with safe professional service and advice. Call our office today at 763-2391 or from Santa Cruz, 426-6340.
Okay, 28 minutes past the hour. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. On the Saturday special, we are discussing the act, as my guest Jeff Dobrin said, which means the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. And when we went to the break, I left you with a question, is what's the difference between someone that wants to spend their money on their entertainment and something such as skiing, which has no... You're left with nothing at the end of the weekend other than the money you spent to do something you enjoyed. How's that any different from internet gambling? Do you have a comment on that, Jeff?
I really do feel like the only real good argument for passing an act like this would be that the impact on society is somehow so detrimental that it's necessary. And I think that that's basically the reasoning that has been given by some of those supporters of the act. I don't know that I see it so much. I really don't know. I'm presumably there probably are some people who are losing a large amount of money online, and perhaps that's an issue. But in my view, it's probably better dealt with through regulation as opposed to trying to just eliminate it. And essentially, that's what the act is doing. I think that before we go too much further, I probably should clarify, the act does not actually create any criminal violation for players. So I feel like, in case just someone's listening and is instantly concerned that the feds are going to pull up in front of their house right now and take away and handcuff.
Or cheering because people will no longer be able to gamble. I'm glad that's where we're going next. So keep going.
Right. The act is not likely to result in the prosecution of any players. It's not to say that in your particular jurisdiction, you may still have certain laws that you're violating by playing online. But this particular act The name of the act is important. They call it the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. In the view of the Congress, at least, they seem to think that internet gambling is already unlawful. And they particularly think it's unlawful under one particular federal law, the Wire Act. And they think that it's unlawful under state laws, too. And they feel like those laws were up until this point unenforceable. This is a way, at least according to the Congress, to allow them to stop internet gambling, basically. And they feel like it's already unlawful. There's nothing they can do about it. Now they feel like they have something they can do about it. And that's why this act was passed by certain opponents of online gambling.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Wire Act? What is that?
The Wire Act is really an old federal law which was passed. I don't know the exact time, but it was passed, I believe, in the early 20th century. The federal law basically prevents you from making certain bets over telephone lines. And the Justice Department has attempted, at least in the last 10 years or so, even under the Clinton administration, to say that this would apply to the Internet. Unfortunately, the law was written well before the Internet was even contemplated. And it's not clear that it does apply to the Internet, and frankly, they've had very little success in prosecuting anyone based on the Wire Act for Internet gambling. That said, they still are trying. The Wire Act is also the other issue is that the Wire Act wasn't necessarily intended for poker either. Most courts have interpreted it to mean that it prohibits mostly sports betting. So my local U.S. Attorney's office here in St. Louis has actually recently brought someone to St. Louis. I've had them extradited for violations of the Wire Act and some other laws too. The Wire Act's the main one. A gentleman by the name of David Carruthers, who ran a site called BetOnSports.com, he made the mistake of changing planes in Texas, and it turned out that there was a federal warrant for him based out of my district, the Eastern District of Missouri. They picked him up and actually had him. He's actually still here in the St. Louis area awaiting trial. So that's the Wire Act. But the Wire Act is almost the Justice Department has only gone after sports betting websites, basically, under the Wire Act. And they feel like it applies. It may, and we'll see if they have success. They've actually prosecuted, I think, a couple people under the Wire Act
for sports betting.
Right. But they've never gone after poker sites. Or other gambling sites, as far as I know. But now the poker sites, in light of this legislation, are extraordinarily concerned. A lot of them have, as you mentioned, cut off U.S. business entirely.
For free tournaments as well.
Well,
the site determines whether to cut off a free tournament, as Titan did.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. As far as I knew, most of the sites were still allowing you to play on there for free. Now, they may only allow you to play on play for free for what we would call play money, and they may not want to actually give you any real money in exchange, because the real money, the whole point of the free roll system before was to, you would entice players in to play a free roll. If they did win some money, then they would then put it back on the site and play with that
They
money.
Would hopefully put it back on the site, but they didn't have
right.
to.
No, of course you wouldn't have to, but that's the idea. You know, it's in your account. You know, you're probably going to go play a real tournament or play a real cash game, and the site would then, you know, get more players, make more money, et cetera.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a business proposition.
So now if they can't make any money off U.S. players, they're probably not going to continue the free rolls. But from what I understand, even the sites that have cut off U.S. business will allow U.S. players to play for fun.
Well, Titan will let you play for fun, but not in the free roll tournaments.
Right. Right.
Because you might win there, and then they'd have to pay you some money, and you're not a prospective gambler on that site. That's
right.
One of the problems there. So I'm concerned about this because it really doesn't – you just made the comment it doesn't prohibit online gambling. So what does it do?
It prevents anyone from accepting a payment in connection with what they call unlawful internet gambling, which is a term that's defined in the Act, and it's an important term to keep – in mind when you're interpreting the Act. I mean, we can get into that a little bit later, but the sites, if they were to accept money in connection with internet gambling, they would be violating the Act as of President Bush signing the Act yesterday. So they're the ones who are facing possible criminal liability. Any site that is operating in violation of this law as of yesterday, it risks possible criminal problems and fines. And what's worse is their officers and employees risk possibly being arrested. And that's part of the problem. And the other problem with some of these companies is they're publicly traded. A couple of the bigger companies are publicly traded in various, I think mostly in the British market. And they've got, of course, fiduciary duties to their investors, to their stockholders. To go on flying in the face of this particular law, you know, most of the public companies have decided they just can't do it. So they've just gone ahead and shut down U.S. business.
Well, how could this affect an offshore site then, Jeff? You know, if the site that's conducting gambling is in offshore, as many of these things are, Gibraltar, these other places, how could that affect them? They're not operating within the United States.
Right. Well, that particular gentleman that I mentioned earlier, who changed planes here in the U.S., he's a British citizen. The company was a British company. He's still going to be subject to U.S. jurisdiction if he sets foot here, and if he's basically breaking the law while he's here. Think of it this way: if someone from another country came into our country and, you know, committed a different crime, robbery, murder, etc., no one would have any problem applying U.S. laws to him at that point, him or her at that point.
No, but the act is conducted within the confines of the borders of the United States.
Right.
It's not illegal to gamble in Gibraltar, right?
Right, but where is the gambling actually taking place? I mean, that's sort of the central question. The Justice Department would tell you the gambling is taking place at the computer screen in Kansas or Missouri or California.
I understand that, but, you know, that's actually that the result is being transmitted. By the way, if I use something like PC Anywhere to control my wife's computer, where the action's taking place is on her computer, not on mine. I'm seeing the result of the action that I'm running from my computer, where I'm running her computer for mine. So I disagree with that, but go ahead. I understand what they're saying. Keep going.
So the Justice Department's feeling, at least, is that they're violating U.S. law on U.S. soil. And if some of these people decide... If some of these sites, like a couple of sites, have decided they're just going to go ahead and continue U.S. business, the problem with that is they're risking possible extradition to the United States. They're probably not going to be able to set foot on U.S. soil again because it's just going to be too risky for them. So that's part of the problem. And you know, we're only dealing at this point with that first part of the act. There's plenty of parts of this act which also have a stifling effect on the industry, but that's the potential criminal ramifications. Even if the act is not successful in that way, it has other ways of being successful too, which we can talk about if you'd like.
Yeah, you know, we're going to start getting to that. Let me ask you, where is that really any... Okay, because I wanted you to talk a little bit about the money transfer system, because that's what it really goes after, because if you're going to gamble online or do something like that, most people do it using credit cards. There are intermediaries like NetTeller, and I don't know if PayPal ever did anything, but there's another one, I can't remember the name of it, that...
FirePay is another big one. In fact, when I first started, it was pretty much well known at that point that Visa and MasterCard, most of those transactions were not possible. If you try to deposit money on a gambling site with Visa or MasterCard, in most cases you're going to be out of luck. It's just not going to work. Visa and MasterCard have done a pretty good job of blocking all those transactions for many years now. So the idea that credit cards were ever a viable option is probably just not true. I know a lot of the press has talked about how you can't use credit cards anymore. You never really could anyway. Most people do use a third-party site like NetTeller. NetTeller is probably the most popular one. They do sort of an electronic funds transfer from their bank account to NetTeller. Then they, from NetTeller, go into the gambling site. That's the way most of these transactions work. The question really at this point is, how effective is the act going to be in prohibiting that particular transaction? It's a difficult question to answer because what the act says is the act basically puts the burden on banks and other financial entities to actually stop prohibited or restricted transactions. And in order to do that, the Federal Reserve is going to have to promulgate some regulations which specify exactly how they're going to do this. But the banks, under the act, will have to do whatever the regulations say in order to prevent restricted transactions. A restricted transaction is going to be any transaction that goes to a site in connection with unlawful Internet gambling. So the regulations need to be promulgated within 270 days of yesterday. A lot of people have mistakenly interpreted that to mean that the act will not have any effect for 270 days. I think that that is a mistake. The act takes effect immediately. And, you know, the effects of the act have already been felt. You know, party gaming, 888 gaming have all, I mean, two very large sites have already said they're not going to accept U.S. business immediately after the signing of the act. The regulations will be interesting because the thing that everyone in the industry wants to know is, will they be able to stop net teller transactions? And that's sort of the big question. It's my opinion that they probably will have to prevent banks from making transactions to net teller and other similar companies. Otherwise, really, if that regulation isn't in the end regulations, the act is probably not going to be worth a whole heck of a lot. It's going to be basically just a stack of papers on a desk. It's not going to be able to have any teeth. And that's the question a lot of people are trying to figure out right now. Will NetTeller still be allowed? NetTeller said they're still accepting U.S. Transactions.
Well, I'm confused here. So NetTeller is part of the American banking industry?
No. NetTeller is another offshore company, so they're not subject to U.S. jurisdiction. But the problem is the second part of the act that I'm talking about says that banks have to do everything in their power to stop restricted transactions. If NetTeller has my money and NetTeller sends it to a poker site or a gambling site, that's a restricted transaction. The regulations say that banks have to prohibit restricted transactions.
So NetTeller only services American clientele, then, you're telling me?
No, they're a worldwide company. They do business with people all over the world.
So we just passed a law. Congress just signed a bill into law, and Congress passed a law that the president signed into law that now affects a banking industry that's not located in the United States, serves a worldwide community, that they're going to dictate what they do with respect to American customers?
No, they're not. They're going to dictate how banks subject to U.S. jurisdiction deal with NetTeller, if that makes sense. The question is, will the regulations actually say, U.S. banks, you are no longer allowed to do transactions with NetTeller, specifically deposits? It's not likely that withdrawals from these sites will be affected, but the regulation may very well say banks are not allowed to send money to NetTeller.
Because NetTeller does happen to transfer money to gambling sites, albeit it transfers money to a lot of other sites as well and a lot of other people that do business on the Internet. Isn't that correct?
Right. Well, yes. NetTeller would say that they do lots of other business, but it's my understanding that most of their business, the overwhelming majority of it, comes from online gambling.
Okay, but so Americans are the overwhelming online gamblers then, eh?
Depending on which site you're talking about, yeah, Americans make up on most of the larger sites between 60 and 70% of the players.
So we are a gambling culture.
Sure.
That likes to gamble. By the way, I'm surprised the Chinese haven't been mentioned because the Orientals love to gamble, as far as I know.
So a lot of the sites, now that America's out of the question, are looking to Asia. At least that's what I've heard. But that, you know, there's a lot of governmental problems, I think, with trying to set up shop there.
Well, let me ask you another question then. Okay, there's a lot of cruise liners out. You know, a lot of cruise ships going back and forth. And I understand they're not on the Internet. But really, what's the difference if I'm on a cruise liner and they got casinos, all of them, that I know of, that you can gamble if you take a cruise? And I say, well, I need a little bit more cash to play roulette. And walk over, and I'm sure most of those things have versatellers on them, so you can grab cash from your account.
Mm-hmm.
What's different? You know, what's the difference between grabbing money to gamble on a cruise ship and deciding you want to do it at home?
Well, if you mean sort of morally and ethically, I don't see much of a difference. But I mean, the act wouldn't apply to that transaction because it's not unlawful Internet gambling. I mean, the other problem, too, is keep in mind what the act is going to be able to do versus what it would like to do. I mean, it would like to prohibit Internet gambling altogether. All it's going to be able to do is restrict certain transactions. Cash is not something that they're going to be able to regulate, obviously. They're not going to be able to know where you're sending your cash. In all likelihood, from what I've – on my blog, I've actually gotten a few comments from some banking insiders. They seem to think that checks also will be impossible for them to track. So cash and checks it would still be a restricted transaction. Keep in mind, if they still accepted money from an American customer, they would still be violating the act, but the second part of the act, which deals with how the banking industry has to stop the transactions, may not be able to pick up a lot of the transactions, may not be able to pick up checks, may not be able to pick up cash, or probably certainly won't be able to pick up cash. And depending on how the regulations are written, net seller may squeak through. And like I said, if net seller does squeak through, the effect of the act is going to be pretty minimal, aside from what's already happened, which is that a bunch of places have closed up shop to U.S. customers.
I still am incredulous that this thing was able to get through Congress, number one. Number two, I don't understand how they could constitutionally write this legislation.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot of people throughout the Constitution, especially, you know, I visit a lot of poker message boards online, and people are, of course, just outraged. And, you know, a lot of people actually play professionally online, and, you know, what they're going to do after this act is passed, I'm not sure. And I've heard some of them mention, you know, they want to band together, hire attorneys, and challenge the act. Unfortunately, though, I don't really know. It's one of those strange things. A lot of times people say, well, I can't be constitutional. I'm not going to pretend to be the best constitutional scholar on earth. I did take two semesters of it in law school, and I feel like I at least know how you go about challenging something on a constitutional basis. There's really only, you know, a handful of ways you can do it, and I don't see any of the routes actually being successful as far as challenging this act goes. I mean, keep in mind what the act does. The act prevents someone from accepting money to be used for an illegal purpose, or at least what Congress feels is an illegal purpose. The constitutional ramifications for that probably aren't all that significant. It may well have an impact on individual liberties, but it certainly doesn't tell you that you can't send your money there. It just tells the banks that they're not allowed to send money there. And it tells these operators they're not allowed to take your money. So I don't know. I mean, you know, some people have mentioned the Commerce Clause as a possible challenge. I don't see that being successful. As far as the Bill of Rights go, I mean, if you go through all of them, not really sure how there's an impact on any of them.
Well, the 10th Amendment certainly says those powers not, you know, prohibited by the Constitution, whatever it says, are relegated to the states. In the state of California, where I live, by the way, you can play poker legally, and there are poker parlors all over the place, including, I think, we have one here in Santa Cruz.
Right. Yeah.
So poker's not illegal in the state of California. What the Congress has effectively done is says, you know, is that we don't care what your state allows. We're going to call it illegal.
Well, that's an interesting perspective to keep the act. Let's get in the act a little bit here.
Yes, let's do it.
The act says that the act prohibits someone from accepting a transaction for in connection with unlawful internet gambling. So in a way, it doesn't affect what your state may say. If your state has a law on the books that says, you know what, you can gamble online, then theoretically, this act would not have any impact on it. The act only impacts unlawful internet gambling. It does not say that any gambling is illegal. It says that if it's otherwise illegal, then it constitutes unlawful internet gambling, and the transactions can't happen.
So if your state does. Yeah, no, it does. But so I'm saying is if it's not unlawful to gamble on the internet in your state, it seems like your state should be what they could literally do on places like NetTeller is start to build a list of states where it's considered legal to gamble.
A couple problems, though.
Yes.
There's a handful of states, first of all, that have explicit statutes that say you can't gamble online, period. And it is just that simple. I don't have a list here in front of me, but the states are states you probably wouldn't think would be on that list. It's Nevada, New Jersey, Louisiana, New York, Washington, I think, is actually a felony to gamble online. There's, I think, like 10 or 11 states that actually have explicit prohibitions on internet gambling. So that's the first problem. The act would obviously apply to those. Some attorneys have come out and said, well, there's still some problems with that. But, you know, it's going to be hard to argue your way out of that one. It's going to be hard to say that what you're doing online is not unlawful internet gambling when your state explicitly prohibits internet gambling. Because the act defines unlawful internet gambling as gambling that would be illegal under state or federal law. And then you have to also keep in mind the Justice Department has taken the position that any gambling online violates the Wire Act. So I think at least the Justice Department, when they're interpreting this act, is going to say that any gambling, period, is unlawful.
This other attorney that analyzed the law made a comment here. Says the Department of Justice insisted that any internet prohibition passed by Congress not expressly authorize internet betting on horse racing. The DOJ believes this will allow it to continue to argue that the Interstate Horse Racing Act does not do exactly what it says it does, legalize interstate horse racing.
I think you're looking at Professor Rose's article, aren't you? Yeah, I read that to you. The horse racing, I haven't paid all that much attention.
In other words, the DOJ is kind of hypocritical here.
Possibly. I don't know the Interstate Horse Racing Act all that well, but it sounds to me they've taken a position that runs completely in the face of the actual wording of the act. I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about that. It wouldn't surprise me all that much. I mean, the Justice Department has, for whatever reason, decided, especially under the Bush administration, it wants to aggressively pursue this issue. And specifically, a certain amount of local U.S. attorney's offices have actually made this a priority. So we're sort of, at the end of the day, having a good argument around the act is great, but you certainly don't want to have to make that argument in front of a jury or a judge, especially in a federal court when you're facing what the act. I mean, the act is 5 years in jail possible and huge fines. So I've heard some arguments that poker isn't gambling. It's not it doesn't qualify under the definition of unlawful internet gambling. I don't think that argument works particularly well. That argument's failed in front of courts for years. And I've heard other arguments that say, gambling online isn't illegal in my state, so it's not unlawful internet gambling. There's the other problem is that some states have statutes that just outlaw gambling, make it a misdemeanor to gamble. And gambling is defined very broadly in most of those statutes. So then you're faced with that problem too. So the arguments that you're left with are not particularly appealing if you're one of these sites that's taking money for internet gambling. That's why I think a lot of sites have just said, we're just going to have to drop out. We don't have any choice. The act is pretty solid. We're going to end up facing possible criminal charges in the United States if we keep up. And we have an obligation to our shareholders to avoid that if at all possible.
Folks, 479-1080, you can fax me at 475-2967. I do have a faxer I need to read. It's from one of my favorites. We call him our serial faxer here, Jeff. Excuse me. It says, Vernon, Smurf City, USA, gambling. It's got a picture of a congressman there. Hurts people. Offshore and computer gambling is bad. We are outlawing it because we know what's good for you. We need to protect you from yourself. Oh, by the way, please patronize your state lotto.
Yeah, well, there's actually an exemption in there for lottery.
There's tons of exemptions for everything. The whole point, folks, whether you believe in, you can deal with gambling any way you wish. There are people that like to gamble for entertainment. And you can call it a vice. We may get into some of this in the next hour. There was a family council thing in there that says it's the best thing since sliced bread because it protects the family. And I'm thinking if your family needs the legislature to ensure its morality and safety, there's a problem with your family. I personally believe that, okay? So what we're stuck with is a law that got through Congress that was tacked on. So what are people going to do? What do you think? What do you think the next step is? What are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Well, as of right now, you can log on to certain sites this morning and keep playing. So far, the only thing that's changed is a certain amount of sites that, maybe you once played on are no longer available. So as of right now, a lot of people sort of think, the law didn't really do anything. I can still go on there and play. There's a bunch of sites that are still taking U.S. bettors. No big deal. And you know what? For now, there's really probably not a whole lot of impact. My concern is that some of these banks may well decide, it's just too risky under the regulations. And the other problem too is the regulations haven't been promulgated, but the law has sort of like a safe harbor provision in there for banks.
Go ahead. The banks can deny your rights, but they're protected from lawsuits.
Right. It basically says something to the effect of, if you're going to block a transaction that you have reasonable belief is a restricted transaction under the act, you're not going to be able to get sued by the person that had their transaction blocked unless you basically acted with recklessness. So for the most part, that's what I call the better safe than sorry provision. I think that banks are likely to take the position, you know what, we don't want to mess with anything that has anything remotely to do with internet gambling, because there's going to be potential fines at the end of the day. We're just going to avoid NetTeller, we're going to avoid FirePay, we're going to avoid anything that smells even remotely funny, and we're going to block it. And my fear is that that's going to happen even sooner than the regulations are promulgated, but I don't know. And if that happens, there still will probably, I mean, there's always going to be a way around it, I think, for people. If they really want to find a way around it, there's probably going to be one. Checks are something that I've heard thrown out there, money orders. The problem is that, you know, from the perspective of these companies who are doing online gambling, the potential turnaround time for a check that has to be mailed to Antigua or whatever offshore facility, it's problematic. It's problematic for poker players as well. I think that most poker players like to play with bad players. And bad players tend to be impulsive. They want to deposit immediately. And up until now, they've been able to do that. You've been able to take money from your bank account, put it onto one of these gambling sites in seconds. The prospect of sending a check, I mean, I don't even write checks anymore. But I guess some people do. You send a check to one of these offshore sites, the turnaround time can be weeks and weeks. Plus, the other problem is, too, is the sites that are actually going to be operating after this law is really taken hold may not be as reputable as I would like. I prefer, you know, I did tons of research on all the sites I played on and the intermediaries I used. I wanted to know who they were, how long they've been around, you know, how could I trust them? My concern is that at the end of the day, the people who are actually still going to fly in the face of U.S. law are not places that you would necessarily want to transact, to, you know, do business with.
Good point. Listen, I'm going to take a call here before the top of the hour, and then we'll continue this after the top of the hour. Okay, you ready for a call here?
Sure.
Billy, you're on the air.
Hey, that last point was so good that the people who will be left over to do it won't exactly be the straightest of them. What a great point. I play on party poker.
Yes.
Yeah. And, well, you know, so Congress passed another law that I'm not going to obey. You know, from the point of view of just a citizen today, Congress's laws have no moral quality, since I sort of learned how a bill becomes a law and it has to do with money from lobbyists and has nothing to do with, you know, right action whatsoever. So isn't this just another congressional law? I mean, if they keep passing laws like this and the citizens stop obeying them, and at some point we're going to change the nature of Congress, because laws passed by Bob Ney, by DeLay, by Foley, by John Boehner, who gives out checks from tobacco interests on the floor of Congress, there is no moral quality in that whatsoever. I know why there's a law against internet gambling, because real gambling palaces like Vegas paid them to do so. Am I crazy or am I right?
It's been discussed. Senator Frist, who basically is responsible for the bill passing, received, I think, quite a bit in contributions from Harris.
What a shock!
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Billy, if you're still there. Have you actually logged on to Party Poker as of today? Have you tried to play today?
No. Why?
Yeah, I think you're locked out. Party has stopped doing business with U.S. customers. So, you know, your civil disobedience is understandable, but I don't think you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, what Jeff is saying, you can't even be civilly disobedient anymore.
Yeah, right. Isn't that amazing?
Not only that, Vernon,
down to this. Can I get in your local game? Because I won't be able to play online anymore.
Well, you know what?
When
I started to talk about doing the show yesterday, I was talking to one of the people in the studio here, and he says, "Well, right." I says, "You can't go to a bar in the United States without people playing horse and all matter of dice games, poker, people gambling." You know,
people like to gamble.
And what really troubles me, for the audience out there that's got a higher moral ground or whatever, is it troubles me that this got tacked onto a bill that was necessary to be signed, the Port Security Act.
Uh-huh. It's even done.
Billy, it wasn't even read. Lautenberg says that no one even read the thing. It was 1 in the morning. Everyone wanted to go home.
Exactly.
Someone was able to put something on a bill that was totally unrelated to it, and they didn't want to not pass the Port Security Act, albeit they should have held it up a couple of days and gotten it right. And we're out of time for this hour. You want to hold over, Billy, or not?
No, that's good.
Okay.
Let's just disobey Congress's laws and understand that
if we could do this, we're just
the least moral group of people on the earth today.
Absolutely. Jeff, will you hang with me through the second hour here?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Call me.
We'll absolutely do this. Folks, we're at the top of the hour. You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Stewart. A UN resolution punishing North Korea for its claimed nuclear test has been adopted. This is Secretary Ban Ki-moon.
The result of the voting is as follows. The draft resolution received 15 votes in favor. The draft resolution has been adopted unanimously.
The Security Council has adopted the motion, a resolution creating sanctions non-military in nature against North Korea. The vote was 15 to nothing. In his weekly radio address, President Bush says the U.S. will work with its allies and the United Nations to make sure North Korea remains nuke-free.
Our goals remain clear: peace and security in Northeast Asia and a nuclear-free Korean Peninsula. We will do what is necessary to achieve these goals. We will support our allies in the region. We will work with the United Nations, and together, we will ensure that North Korea faces real consequences if it continues down its current path.
The president said America will work with their allies, that North Korea won't even have the materials to test weapons or missiles. In the Democratic response, Representative Patrick Murphy said under President Bush, America's safety has greatly diminished. 17 decapitated bodies of Shiite construction workers have been found in an orchard outside of Baghdad. It's in retaliation for an attack on Sunni Arabs that happened last week. 14 others have been killed today in Iraq, most in sectarian attacks. Israeli aircraft fired missiles at a car carrying militants today, killing at least one passenger. Fox's Mike Tobin reports.
According to the army, the goal is to stop Palestinians from firing their homemade Qassam rockets at Israeli towns near the Gaza Strip. Palestinians responded with anti-tank fire. Israeli aircraft fired several times into the Gaza Strip.
The militants killed in today's airstrike were planning to launch rockets into Israel. Repeating our top story, the UN has unanimously adopted sanctions against North Korea. Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Stewart.
Complicated. Rebuilding the space shuttle's jet engine with just a screwdriver and a crescent wrench.
Uncomplicated. Giving a gift to a worthy cause.
Complicated. Riding a stubborn camel bareback across the Sahara Desert.
Uncomplicated. Using your financial resources to help others.
Complicated. Sailing around the world in a homemade raft without a compass.
Uncomplicated. Donating stock to the American Heart Association. It's simpler than it seems. It's an easy way to make a donation, and your gift will do something even greater than creating a profit. It will help save lives. Donate before December 31st, and you'll quickly receive the benefits of your gift. To learn more about the advantages of a stock donation to the American Heart Association, call 1-800-242-8721. Take stock in life.
Complicated. Maneuvering a hot air balloon through a wind farm.
Uncomplicated. Helping give someone a second chance at life.
Police in Port St. Lucie County, Florida, are putting the pieces together today as they try to find the person responsible for a fatal family shooting. Early Saturday morning, two adults and two children were killed along Florida's Turnpike. During a press release today, St. Lucie County Sheriff Ken Mascara releases the name and date of birth of the adult female victim.
Female victim is Jessica Guerrero Escobedo. Her date of birth is 090581.
The family of four had moved to Florida from Texas 4 months ago. No one's been arrested. Investigators still looking for clues. Buffalo, New York, and surrounding communities still digging out from an early snowstorm that's left hundreds of thousands without power and three people dead. Thursday and Friday were the two snowiest October days in Buffalo since the National Weather Service began keeping track 137 years ago. The Federal Aviation Administration is banning small fixed-wing planes from flying along New York City's East River without approval of air traffic control. The move follows this week's crash of a small plane into a Manhattan skyrise, killing Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor. Another New York Yankee in an airplane mishap, too.
A private jet carrying Yankees third baseman Alex Rodriguez skidding off a runway in Burbank, California. No one hurt, and A-Rod's fine. Across the country, the FAA now banning all fixed-winged aircraft from New York City's East River corridor unless the pilot is in contact with air traffic control. The announcement 2 days after a light plane slammed into a high-rise along the East River, killing New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor. Jay Nutzler, Fox News Radio.
And the Cardinals get a win over the Mets.
And Belliard, to his right, makes the final play, and the Cardinals will split here at Shea Stadium and head home for Game 3 tomorrow night.
That series now tied between the Mets and Cardinals at one game apiece. Game three tonight in St. Louis. I'm Karen Stewart, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, October 14th, 2006. It looks like you can expect the clouds to clear up later. With sunny conditions, highs should be around 75 degrees. Winds west-southwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, some clouds with lows around 50 degrees and winds west at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Your Monterey Bay Boaters forecast for today, light winds becoming west 5 to 10 knots in the afternoon, with wind waves up to 1 foot and a mixed swell west 2 to 4 feet at 10 seconds and south 2 feet at 15 seconds. The temperature here at the station is 60 degrees, and it's time to take you back to the Saturday special with your guest host Vernon Borg right here on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz and AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville.
Is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
The following gem came to me from Judy DeVilbiss, author unknown, and the subject is Why Wear Red on Fridays? Whether I support the war or not isn't the issue. I've met a number of soldiers in my practice traveling to and from Iraq, injured in some fashion as a result of the war. I've been impressed most with their quiet dignity and courage. They don't express their personal views on the war. I met a Marine yesterday who completed three tours there. He was injured by an IED while on an armored vehicle. He wasn't bitter. He continues to do his job. Regardless of personal views, they're doing what our government asks them without complaint. It makes me proud to be an American. They are our best. They are our children. This story was sent to me. This is not my personal story. When I travel and a soldier is acknowledged on a plane, there has been no dissent with regard to the heartfelt applause from the soldiers, in spite of differing opinions on the rightness or morality of the war. This makes me proud of all of us as Americans. This week I heard several people talk about wearing red on Friday, but I didn't really know why then, and I think I know why now. Last week, while traveling to Chicago on business, I noticed a Marine sergeant traveling with a folded flag, but didn't put two and two together. After we boarded our flight, I turned to the sergeant, who'd been invited to sit in first class across from me, and inquired if he was heading home. No, he responded. Heading out? I asked. No, I'm escorting a soldier home. Going to pick him up? No. He's with me right now. He was killed in Iraq. I'm taking him home to his family. The realization of what he had been asked to do hit me like a punch to the gut. It was an honor for him. He told me that although he didn't know the soldier, he had delivered the news of his passing to the soldier's family and felt as if he knew them after many conversations in so few days. I turned back to him, extended my hand, and I said, "Thank you. Thank you for doing what you do, so my family and I can do what we do." Upon landing in Chicago, the pilot stopped short of the gate and made the following announcement over the intercom. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to note that we have had the honor of having Sergeant Steely of the United States Marine Corps join us on this flight. He's escorting a fallen comrade back home to his family. I ask that you please remain in your seats while we open the forward door to allow Sergeant Steely to deplane and receive his fellow soldier. We will then turn off the seatbelt sign. Without a sound, all went as requested. I noticed the sergeant saluting the casket as it was brought off the plane, and his action made me realize that I'm proud to be an American. So, here's a public thank you to our military men and women for what you do so that we can live the way we do. Now, about Red Fridays. Very soon, you will see a great many people wearing red every Friday. The reason? Americans who support our troops used to be called the silent majority. We are no longer silent and are voicing our love for God, country, and home in record-breaking numbers. We're not organized, boisterous, or overbearing. Many Americans, like you, me, and all our friends, simply want to recognize that the vast majority of America supports our troops. Our idea of showing solidarity and support for our troops with dignity and respect starts this Friday and continues each and every Friday until the troops all come home, sending a deafening message that every red-blooded American who supports our men and women afar will wear something red. By word of mouth, press, TV, let's make the United States on every Friday a sea of red, much like the homecoming football game in the bleachers. If every one of us who loves this country will share this with acquaintances, co-workers, friends, and family, it will not be long before the USA is covered in red, and it will let our troops know the once silent majority is on their side now more than ever, certainly more than the media lets on. The first thing a soldier says when asked, "What can we do to make things better for you?" is, "We need your support and your prayers." So, let's get the word out and lead the class with dignity by example and wear something red every Friday. If you agree, then send this on. If you couldn't care less, then hit the delete button. It's your choice. We live in the land of the free only because of the brave. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
You know, I would question whether we live in the land of the free when Congress can pass this this particular act. Jeff, I'm going to take a call here, and then what I want to do is I want you to go through a lot of the bill specifics because you're the real expert on that. And then at the end of the show, I want to focus on some of the ramifications of this bill, because it seems to me is if the Congress can pass this particular bill, then they could use this methodology of actually controlling and enforcing many things that happen over the Internet. So I'm going to go ahead and take a caller here, and then we'll continue on with Bill. Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Yes.
Yes.
I want to echo what Billy said. I think that you have to look at the money. Some of these guys, I suspect that the American hard gambling places will put up the money to, or sweeten the pot, or put blue into Frist's ear and told him, gave him marching orders.
Well, I think there's a real hypocrisy here. There was one article by Sir Ronald Sanders that I read, and he says, you know, if the United States were not the main center of the world for gambling, the bill ostensibly adopted on the basis of morality may have been acceptable. But, you know, we're a culture that likes to gamble, and I personally take offense to the fact that Congress would tell me how I can spend my money.
Exactly. I'll clear my throat. I don't disagree with you. I think that it's going to be kind of like prohibition. You're going to give illegal gamblers a foothold and you know, let them run rife. If you don't have it regulated, or it kind of regulated itself, I think that sure that, you know, anything that done to excess is not very good. You know, get too much water, you're going to drown. Not enough, you die of food. But anyhow,
you die of thirst,
I guess.
You know, maybe Congress could restrict transactions of using your ATM or credit card to buy hamburgers at McDonald's and Burger King. Everyone's taking those things these days because it's bad for your health.
Exactly. And I was going to ask, is your guest named Jeff?
Yes. Jeff, you still there?
I'm here, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if you, you kind of set up an offshore bank account. You transferred your money to the offshore bank account and then, in a separate transaction, then you kind of shifted your money to wherever you wanted to gamble. So you'd go through that offshore account to get your money. They really have to, I don't see how they could legislate against that. It would seem like it'd bring commerce to a screeching halt.
Well, actually, that's been mentioned on a few of the message boards. I talked about it on my blog a little bit. A couple problems. I mean, first of all, the first problem is that even before the law was signed, we had companies who were just refusing to take U.S. business after the law. First of all, you have to find a site that would take your money. The second problem is that, I mentioned it on my blog, and a couple people immediately told me, you know what, it's not that easy to get an offshore bank account these days. You've got to present identification and it's a bit of an administrative hassle. And even to get to that point where you were actually submitting ID or a passport or something to show that you're actually who you say you are, you'd actually then have to find a bank that's willing to go ahead and violate this particular act. It's certainly possible.
Well, they wouldn't be violating it if you just, you're just transferring money to your account in that bank.
Well, they may be. If the regulations go ahead and say that, for instance, NetTeller is a prohibited place to transfer money, and then the bank does transfer money to NetTeller, and they would be violating the U.S. regulations. If they transferred money directly to the gambling site, they would certainly be violating the laws as written right now.
But what Ed's talking about, what if you set up an offshore bank account? I started to look. That certainly is possible, like in the Netherlands, for example.
Sure. No, it's a possible option, but the bank would still be violating the law. I mean,
if the bank's outside the U.S. jurisdiction,
but most of these banks, though, I mean, most of the big banks, the banks you would actually trust to hold your money, they have expensive U.S. assets that would be subject to possibly subject them to jurisdiction in the U.S. They're not going to want to mess around with this. I really don't think so. You're going to have to find a bank that's completely isolated, which these days is probably not very likely.
You know, folks,
I think it's definitely an option, Vernon. I just don't think it's that simple. Plus, I think of things from the poker perspective. I wonder if the only people who are going to take that much trouble to actually play poker online are going to be some pretty good players that I really probably don't want to mess around with. As far as I don't want to play with guys who are willing to set up on offshore accounts to transfer money to the poker site. I'm not sure that's going to kill the poker economy. I'm not going to be able to beat those guys.
Well, and there again, I know there are a lot of listeners out there that are probably listening at this from the standpoint of a highly moralistic aspect. But I want to say is that when the government, the force of government can step in there and tell you how you can and can't spend your money, there's something wrong with that. And when your legislators can pass laws that are a hodgepodge of different subjects, we can't even do that in California with the initiative process. Each initiative has to be a single issue item. And I see this as a tremendous loss of freedom, whether you believe in gambling or not. By the way, I was just thinking, Jeff, do you think it might be possible they might use this method down the line to control pornography sites?
They could certainly do it if the pornography was unlawful. I don't know. It's not an area of expertise for me, but there's probably some similar laws already on the books, I would think.
That's an interesting thing that as you brought that up, is that so pornography is not unlawful. It doesn't damage families, but some guy like you is engaged in an unlawful act by playing poker online.
Yeah, some pornography, I'm sure, is unlawful. Obviously, there's certain kinds that clearly would be, and I would think that if Congress wanted to, if they don't, they may already have a law in the books, I don't know. If they wanted to pass a law that would prevent a transaction to a site that's got unlawful pornography, they'd certainly be within their rights.
Jeff, I got to tell you something. Ed's one of my callers here, and I think that we tend to be on different sides of the political spectrum from time to time. Would you say, Ed?
I was a Florida again that we're in agreement.
Hey, something's happening here because I think there are a lot of Americans out there.
Maybe you're coming over to my side and seeing that this administration isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Listen, I happen to believe that they're all corrupt. different ways, I think that
just like Animal Farm, you know, all people are created equal. Some are just
more equal than others. Hey, Ed, thanks for the
one more thought.
Yes.
One more thought. I think that, you know, I talked about kind of the unintended consequences of, you know, this. I think that basically, you know, they're trying to legislate morality, and that really never works. And, you know, I'd like to see another big facet of this is, you know, is betting on football games. And I don't know what the, you know, the handle or the flow of money is within that, but I think that the South dearly loves their football, and yet they tend to be more moralistic than maybe the rest of the country, and so they're kind of in a conflict. I just wonder how they're going to resolve that conflict between their football and their morals.
I don't know.
Well, the NFL, just keep hitting on it. I think we've got to. We've come to some middle ground here, Vern, and if we can keep...
I just think this is wrong.
Well, I'm glad. I think it is, too. I think that, you know, that we do this, and they've allowed it to happen. You know, I think you've railed against earmarking, and it's, you know, it smacks of this stuff that's done, you know, in the middle of the night, and there's so much legislation going through that you really have no chance to have any oversight on it. Certainly the American public didn't have any chance to put any input into this and let their feelings be known on it. And it just, you know,
the polls actually show that I think most people are against a bill like this, from what I've seen. So.
Yeah, they sneak it in. But it's not something that probably you could generate enough interest or outrage about to get it changed. It's, you know, it's something that's kind of probably have to be changed back through a similar tactic where you just change it back and load it into some other bill in the middle of the night and change it back the way it was.
Bill loading.
Exactly.
It's one of those things where there's going to be a bunch of people who are opponents to internet gambling, and those opponents are going to be pretty vigorous about their opposition. But there's not going to be a whole lot of people willing to step up to the plate in support of it, as it sits right now. So that's been part of the problem.
It was interesting that, you know, that one of the states that was against internet gambling was Nevada. And, of course, you know why sure. that would be. It was because of the legalized gambling there. And it, you know, it cuts into their – well, and then you go to Abramoff, who was pitting one Indian tribe against the other, where they had their gambling venue in one state and one in the other. And so one was paying Abramoff to put the kibosh on the other's gambling operation.
Right, and Abramoff actually was involved in killing this bill, you know, several years back, or killing a similar bill.
Yeah.
And that was sort of a rallying cry for some of the supporters of this bill. You know, don't let Abramoff's legacy, you know, get involved with this. We need to.
Well, maybe not all bad guys are all bad. Huh?
Right. Well, I think he was probably doing it more for the money that he was getting from some of those Indian tribes you're discussing. Or I think he actually was maybe hired by some of the online gambling.
He could have been hired by the offshore guys to do it. I mean,
well, unfortunately, this time a lot of them are currently regretting the fact that they didn't undertake much of a lobbying effort this time. And
They basically got blindsided by it. Sounds like.
Well, in a way, but I mean, keep in mind that a similar version of this thing had passed the House, you know, a couple of weeks before this. I mean, they knew that it was out there. They knew first of all they were going to let it go, and I think that they just assumed, like Vernon and I discussed earlier,
exactly.
That the Senate had no chance of passing this thing.
And they would not have passed it were it introduced as its own bill, and I cannot believe it was tacked on. I invite you all to go look at the Port Security Act, and everything ties together except this add-on at the end, like a bad add-on to a house or something. Ed, got to go. Thanks so much for calling. Bye-bye.
You know, Vernon, just to sort of piggyback a little bit on what he said, he was talking about some of the unintended consequences.
Yes.
I read an article, it was actually right after the act was passed. Apparently in Central Park in New York, there's a group of bookies who had sort of an impromptu celebration after the act was passed, knowing knowing that the bill would have, you know, a really tremendous impact on their business. They, you know, figure all these guys who are betting online on the sports are going to have to come back to them now. Yeah. And I think in a way that's proven to be somewhat correct. It's sort of a bizarre contradiction. You know, see Senator Frist is touting morality. He passes this thing. And then look at the bookies sort of having a little bonfire celebration. I thought it was an amusing little tidbit that I'd read.
Yeah, well, I see it a lot like the Prohibition Act. Nikki, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, first off, I didn't understand if what the wording is exactly on this bill. I'm not aware that it actually states that it's for a moral purpose that you guys are talking about, and I'm wondering if they're not using this as a way to also help in stopping funneling of funds for terrorists in our country, that if maybe they want to set up offshore accounts and do this through this gambling site, who knows?
That, Jeff, that's in your ballpark, in your court right now.
Well, you know, the supporters of the bill actually use the big T word, terrorism, in support of the act, that, you know, saying that maybe somehow terrorist groups could be funded through some of these sites. Unfortunately, I never really saw any evidence of that, and I think it was more political posturing than anything. I don't know exactly how that could happen, or where a terrorist group could end up being funded through one of these sites. I thought it was somewhat absurd, but it was certainly an argument used in support of the bill. That's really all I could tell you, and I personally think it's kind of bogus. But.
You know, Nikki, if they'd even tried to tie the bill, if they tried to relate it to the Port Security Act in that fashion, I might not be having this show. Part of the problem that I have is the way they just slapped it in there.
Right, but you know what I'm thinking is that it's easy for, you know, one of the things I've heard advertised is this: incorporate in Nevada, and then that keeps them out of your business and everything there. And I can't help but wonder how easy it would be with that incorporating in Nevada stuff along with some of these sites, and that porn site might be exactly, that would be perfect. That would be a lot easier. And I can't help but wonder if they were trying to do this without giving a heads up with it, what they were doing.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think has happened here, too, is that Texas Hold'em poker has become popular in this country over the last couple of years because all the tournaments online, Travel Channel, a whole bunch of these places start showing these tournaments, and people start saying, well, do I have a little bit of skill here? And they started to play it. It's become popular, and so sites opened in response to that. What do you have to say about that, Jeff?
Well, you know, the Act actually in 5361 of the Act, I encourage everyone to go read the Act. I know a lot of people don't want to read legislation, but, I mean, the Act is not that densely worded that it's impossible to read even for a non-lawyer. I recommend everyone go read it. It's at the end of the Port Security Act, like you said. There's a link to it. I mean, really, if you just do a Google search, you'll find it. But there's a link to it on my blog. Anyone can go there and see it. But on page 213, Congress sort of discusses their findings and purpose. They'll do this occasionally. And usually what it says is, you know, here's why we're passing the law. You know, they don't discuss terrorism in there. They discuss, I'm reading it right now, they say that in 1999 they had an impact study. They formed a commission. The commission said, you know what, we need to stop wire transactions to the internet gambling site. So they say that. They then say that internet gambling is a growing problem as far as debt collection goes, because a lot of banks, this just says that, people are getting into debt, and then they can't pay their credit cards, I think is basically what it says.
Well,
and they feel like that's because of the online gambling. So that's another reason. And then it says, you know what, we need new mechanisms for enforcing these laws on the Internet because the Internet's different, and we're not able to enforce it based on the current laws. So those are the reasons that they give for passing the law, and you can kind of go look at that for yourself. It's 5361. It's on page 213 of the Port Security Act. So to me, the whole terrorism issue is probably a non-issue. I think it's somewhat nonsensical that somehow you could fund terrorist groups through the gambling sites. I don't think there's any evidence that's ever happened.
Okay, well, that's good. But I mean, I'd have to agree with them on this debt thing. I mean, we need to get back under control for our debt and our economy, because as long as people are in debt and these businesses are having problems collecting things, I'm not so sure I feel sorry for the gambling website, but I mean, people are going into debt, and it's hurting them personally, and that overall is going to be hurting our economy.
Mm-hmm. Nikki, let me ask you something. Do you think that the banks have any responsibility in screening people that they extend credit to rather than soliciting bad credit risks to get them in debt so they can collect high interest rates.
I think it's criminal.
You know,
I think it's absolutely criminal what they're doing. From a business aspect, I can understand how they would, you know, business is business. But in the same, I mean, who says that bankers were ever moral?
I think the bankers...
Or stockbrokers, for that matter. Now, come on.
Well, can I say something, Vernon,
real quick
in response to that? Here's my feeling. I think that there's definitely an argument for, you know, for the fact that maybe some people are getting in trouble gambling on the Internet. There probably are some people that are doing that. There are probably some people that have some problems. But to me, the solution is that, I mean, it, just like in Missouri, gambling is legal if you go to a licensed casino. We have loss limits here in Missouri. There's only a certain amount you can lose. There's been discussion recently about eliminating the loss limits, but the loss limits are still in place, and I think a lot of states have that. Would it make you feel any better, Billy, if we were able to somehow regulate online poker instead of just trying to eliminate it entirely like this bill is trying to do? Why not set up some sort of system where it's legalized, it's licensed, it's regulated, and maybe we could have some sort of loss limits? Because as it is right now, people can lose an unlimited amount of money, and literally they could lose thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars a day on some of these offshore sites. If we somehow set it up to be regulated, if Congress passed some sort of legislation to regulate it and there's a loss limit, would that maybe make you feel a little bit better as far as some of these problems with people getting into debt goes?
Vicki?
You know, I wanted to bring a subject up. There is a friend of mine who's mentally disabled, and he has told these credit card companies that he's mentally disabled, and yet they continue to send credit cards to him, knowing that he doesn't have the capacity to figure out what the interest rates are and the fact that it adds on to the principal, and then you've got interest on that, which adds on your next principal, and they continue to send these things out to people, as well as teenagers and stuff, which puts them in bad credit as soon as they start out.
I think the banking industry is a real example of bad regulation. Anyway, Nikki, got to get going, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. 479-1080, folks. I'm going to go ahead and take Liz here in a second. Regulation really seems to be the way to go as far as I'm concerned. But there again, I'm really concerned that they could pass this law that tells me as a private citizen how I can spend my money and what I consider to be entertainment. Throughout life, there are always people getting in trouble in all sorts of stuff. And if you are a habitual gambler, I think that they will find ways to gamble above and beyond the Internet. But I wanted to ask you one question. Since you play poker, I've played poker in Vegas and thing. And the way the house makes its money typically is it just takes a percentage off the top.
The rake.
So that for the most part, the money and I know there's a lot of money in those percentages because that's how gambling industry works. That's pretty much how the way it is on online poker too, right? You're just trading bucks as players.
Yeah, they take a percentage of the pot in a cash game, that's a small percentage, but then they take for a tournament they take an entry fee.
Yeah.
People call it the rake. Some people call it the vig. But yeah, that's how they make their money. It's an extraordinarily lucrative business. And these sites have made billions of dollars.
Oh yeah, I'm sure like $7 billion. They says what was killed. But the point being is the players are actually pretty much trading bucks, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
The players are trading, but you go in with your aunt, your Annie, your stake, and you win or lose, and you're there at the end of the game till you go out with whatever you go out with, right?
Yeah.
Liz, you're on the air.
Well, as a social worker, I feel like I have to comment that gambling is something that can become an addictive very easily. Something like alcohol with certain personalities and the gambling type people that I really are. I mean, that I'm just doing it for passing recreation, a pastime. They are very much prone to getting hooked. And unless you've seen the kind of destruction that can occur after that, I don't think you really realize that it destroys families, it destroys careers, it destroys character, It destroys solvency. It just destroys everything as much as alcoholism ever did it. And so that may be an attempt to sort of keep it down. I remember reading an article 10 years ago about how programs on television that portrayed gambling were causing housewives to become addicted to gambling. So availability of something that's destructive is a very potent factor.
Well, Liz, I'm going to ask you a question then. I'll tell you, I think we have a bigger problem in this country with eating, by the way. It's easier
So
now I think we need a law that says you can't use your credit cards to go out to dinner and eat. You know, at some point, you need to instill some sort of personal responsibility in people. And I've been talking to Jeff here for an hour and 35 minutes, roughly, you know, excluding the breaks and stuff. Jeff, are you addicted, do you think?
Well, you know, I just recently read a book that talked about how, you know, a poker player that doesn't think about addiction is you know, an idiot. I mean, everyone who plays, if you start to like the game and you start to want to play it some more, you start to ask yourself, are you addicted? I don't know. I mean, to me, the best way to tell if you have what is probably better characterized as a gambling problem, it's when it starts to affect your life adversely. You know, and to me, that's the question. Are you starting to borrow money to play? I've never done that. You know, Are you starting to avoid time with your family to play? You know, that's never happened to me. I think that those are probably better indicators. You know, do you take money that you should be paying bills with and gamble it? I don't do that. So I tend to say no. I mean, I love playing. I actually don't love playing as much as I used to. And when I first started, I really loved playing more. Now I actually like playing live a little bit better than I do online.
You know what's funny listening?
I think that it is. I mean, it's a very addictive thing, gambling. There's no question about it. But to me, you know, just as a comparison was just made, I mean, so is alcohol. I mean, we've tried to prohibit alcohol in the past in this country. It didn't really go over too well. I don't know that this is really going to be all that. Is this really going to be any more successful? I mean, people who want to bet sports are going to find their local bookies. People who maybe can't gamble online as easily are just going to hang out in casinos more. Home games for poker are going to be more prevalent. I just, you know, if that's really our goal, I wonder if legislation is going to work in, as far as prohibiting it.
Liz, I'm not questioning your comments about the destruction that can occur in families with respect to gambling addictions, okay? No question whatsoever regarding that.
Neither am I. It can happen.
But it's something like, I mean, we have a problem now with the Internet with pornography and children. Now, do you not approve restriction, if it were possible, on that, you know?
The funny thing is there's virtually no restrictions on that.
Well, the police try now to exercise a certain amount of surveillance, and they have caught a number of those people by doing that. But the problem of the Internet is that it isn't very controllable, that's for sure. But because it's not very controllable, we're having all these new problems about children, about gambling, about money, profligate spending, maybe even about eating and buying and things like that.
You know,
that.
Liz, I'm glad you bring up children, because one of the things that's one of the things that's always brought up, and at the heart of that, I see as a major problem is the deterioration of family, and without a strong family, you're going to have all sorts of problems. So I'm going to give you a closing comment here, and then we need to move on shortly, okay?
Go ahead. All righty.
Bye-bye. You know, it's interesting, Jeff, what can we tackle this on? I went to a site that says the National Gambling Impact Study Commission report. Have you read that?
I don't know that I have.
Anyway, it was from a family, www.family.org, whose site is providing the background basis and justification for the act, and they applaud Bill Frist's stuff. But I went in here because it brought up gambling and children. Okay. And I start reading through here, and lo and behold, I come across something. It says, as one observer notes, tournaments, even slot machine tournaments, for example, have been excluded from the definition of games of chance by the FCC. That's interesting.
They say that slot machine tournaments are not games of chance. Interesting. I don't know. Do they cite the specific regulation where that is?
The FCC, they have a reference number 17. It's an IBID, and I'd have to trace it back. Okay. But that, I think that's interesting. Liz, any closing comment here?
Well, I think maybe the FCC needs a little investigation.
Well, like I say, my whole point is people are going to do a whole variety of stuff. There's a lot, you know, there are people that gamble, that become addicted. But I am really concerned that Congress is telling people what they can or can't do with their money. And you can go on cruise ships and gamble. I can go to Vegas and gamble. I can go over the hill. There are gambling, or poker casino, you know, poker rooms here. There's one in Santa Cruz, I believe. And you can go all through the state of California. There's the Indian gambling and everything else. I think there's a certain amount of hypocrisy here.
Oh, I think the Indian gambling has ruined the Indians. I have long felt that their culture has been completely shattered by putting their living on the basis of gambling, and I think it's been a terrible thing.
I've actually thought that maybe the state should take over gambling. Great revenue generator. Liz, got to go, okay?
Okay.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jeff, I'm going to give you the floor. What do you want to talk about next? I got another caller here on the line we're going to get to in a second, but... Like I say, this was not so much of a conversation for me regarding the morality of gambling. Clearly anything can be addictive in life.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be gambling, whether it be eating, whether it be, as you said, prohibition, that didn't work. And maybe in the remaining hours, unless there's a specific aspect of the law you want to cover as an attorney, which I'd love to hear, is what do you see as the far-reaching ramifications? You brought up an interesting point on your analysis of the bill, is the ramifications with respect to affiliate sites.
Yeah, there's at least a certain amount of people in the U.S. who are making money by referring people to certain gambling sites. Typically, the way it works is you put a link on your site. If you've got enough traffic, someone may click on your link and then go sign up at one of these gambling sites. I express some concern, and some other people express some concern about possible charges against those people if they end up making money. And if they end up making money from one of these websites that's actually accepting money in connection with unlawful internet gambling, they may expose themselves to potential criminal liability. And it's a concern for me. The significant concern there is a lot of those people are actually on U.S. soil. So it's a lot easier for the Fed to come pick them up as opposed to some of these other companies that are in, you know, bizarre jurisdictions where federal government maybe doesn't have a simple fix to pick someone up, and maybe they have to wait for them to come here. With the case of these affiliate sites, if you're actually out there making money from an online poker site or an online gambling site, it's something that I think you probably ought to be somewhat concerned about, maybe want to seek some legal counsel on, because I fear that the Justice Department may start to, test the waters a little bit in that area. They may decide, you know what, we can't get some of these sites immediately, but we can get some of these affiliates. You know, some of these affiliates are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. From what I understand, they may be subject to a possible conspiracy charge or maybe an aiding and abetting charge based upon their actions. I think it's something that some people, anyone who's out there doing that, probably ought to take note of the act and be concerned. So that's one problem. There's another part of the act that we haven't talked about, too, and it's sort of it's a little bit of a controversial part of the act, and people are interpreting it differently, but there is a provision in there that allows local U.S. attorneys' offices and state attorney generals to seek injunctions against restricted transactions under the act. And it also has a provision on there that would allow them to get injunctions in local district, federal district courts that might actually block some of these sites from some people's computer screens. The question is how powerful of a provision is that? I've seen various discussions about it from other attorneys. The wording is not clear, may need to be litigated, but I'm hopeful that under those provisions, they probably won't be able to block some of the sites that actually are doing business. But we may not know, and my concern is that some of the local U.S. attorneys may actually try to use some of those provisions to get these sites actually blocked. So, of course, at that point, if the site's blocked, kind of a moot point as to whether or not any of it's legal, what transaction's legal, you won't be able to get there in the first place. So those are some areas that are probably going to be litigated, and we're just going to see how much of an effort some of the local U.S. attorneys' offices actually want to put into this? Are they going to actually pursue this? Are they going to file for injunctions? And those are open questions we just don't know, just like we don't know what the regulations are going to do to some of these intermediary sites like NetTeller. And that's going to play out probably over the next 6-9 months. And it'll be interesting to see. And really, I think the big barometer is going to be for me at the World Series of Poker next year in July or June, whenever it is, how many seats will actually be there. I think at the last World Series, there was upwards of 8,000 entries. That was the largest field ever. My prediction is that we're going to see for the first time in World Series of Poker history, we're going to see fewer people enrolled in the main event of the World Series of Poker, which will be kind of a sad day for the poker world. And, you know, that's kind of another issue as to why that's the case. But I think for various reasons, these sites are not going to – most of the people who actually played in the World Series last year got their entry through one of these websites by playing a tournament, a satellite tournament, and then they were able to win an entry into the World Series.
You know, in a way, I don't know that it's all that much different than someone that goes into golf as a profession. You know, people get out there. Of course, they don't necessarily ante their money up. But, you know, if you're in professional racing, people have to sponsor you. And, Rich, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. A couple things. First of all, you know, every day we gamble driving on the highways with 20 million illegal aliens driving without license. And that's a terrible gamble. My question is, and I missed the last half hour. I caught the first hour, but then I got interrupted.
I hope it wasn't on online poker.
No. Do you have to prove that you're a U.S. citizen? Or what if you're from another country, like from England or France, and you're over here either on a work visa or whatever, for whatever reason, and you want to gamble? Do you have to prove to the website that's cutting you off that you're a citizen or not a citizen? I mean, how do they know?
You're going to have to register, you have to give them at least your personal information, and most of the time through one of these intermediary sites, you're going to have to give your personal information, which you're going to want to be accurate if you want to get paid, which links to your bank account. Keep in mind, though, that it doesn't necessarily matter where you are exactly. The Act prohibits restricted transactions regardless of where they happen.
So this law applies to citizens all over the country, all over the world, that come here and won't be allowed to play.
If they come here, remember what the Act does. The Act restricts banks, it restricts these sites from accepting payments.
Right, I understand that.
They're concerned about possible U.S. jurisdiction kicking in if they take these payments from U.S. customers. That's from the perspective of the websites. The perspective of the banks is a little bit different. The perspective of the banks is that if they give money to these poker sites in any way, or if they give money to NetTeller possibly, then they're in violation of the law, regardless of who their customer is. To me, that's the concern. Even if they're if the customers are U.S. customers in particular, but even if they're U.S. customers dealing with foreign banks, they still have to be concerned about possible criminal liability and fines based upon the second part of the Act, which would restrict the restricted transactions.
I think that what Rich is trying to get to is, though, let's say you're French you're French with legal residence in the United States, or you're over here visiting. Isn't that what you're saying, Rich?
Yeah, you want to gamble just like you gambled when you're in France.
Right. Okay, so you're probably going to have a French bank account set up. Your residency is going to be French. They're not going to have any way of knowing, unless they can somehow track that your IP address is American. That would be the only way, and that would be if the site just decided to restrict all American IP addresses, they could potentially do that. Otherwise, I wouldn't see any. That French person is going to be able to log onto their site, barring some sort of restriction from the Internet service provider. They're going to be able to log on to that site and gamble.
Okay. And then the other question I had, is anybody starting any, now that they snuck this thing through, is anybody starting any legal action against this being an illegal bill that was passed by Congress? Or is anybody considering it or looking at it? Or?
Yeah, we discussed it a little bit earlier. Here's the problem. I don't know exactly what basis you would challenge the Act on. I'm assuming that you're thinking of some sort of constitutional basis, maybe. Well, or
right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness?
Yeah, I mean, remember, though, the Act isn't actually preventing you from sending your money places. It's preventing some of these websites from accepting money for unlawful purposes. Generally, I don't see that there's going to be any constitutional problem with that. It would be just like if you wanted to send your money to a group that was affiliated with terrorist organizations, the U.S. government would be within its rights to pass a law saying you can't do that.
And by the way, Rich,
there's no difference than this. This gambling is unlawful, according to them, and they should be allowed to restrict banks from sending money to be used for unlawful purposes. That's their position. So there's really as far as individual rights go, I'm not really sure how they play in. It may have the effect of precluding us from doing some things that we feel like we should have the right to do, but it doesn't actually preclude them directly.
You know, the other thing, though, too, Rich, is that they passed this, I think it was September 30th, and it was just signed into law yesterday.
I know, I heard it.
And so, consequently, it's really, you know, one of the beauties about the human spirit is it will continue to work on problems, looking for solutions. So I think it's really too early to really tell how it's going to shake out, albeit people like Jeff here have been working on this mentally from the legal aspect for quite some time because they've seen it potentially coming down the pike. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, and it may be challenged. There may be, there's a set of professional online poker players I've heard were rallying together to get some legal fees together to think of, you know, to brainstorm on ways of challenging it. They may attempt to do it. I fail to see exactly what their challenge would be based on. There's also the whole international aspect of this, too. It may be that the WTO maybe tries to take some action against the United States, saying, you know what, this is an unlawful act under, you know, various agreements that you've signed with our member countries, and it violates all those laws. You can't do it. But, I mean, in my experience, you know, our government doesn't really care too much about what the international community thinks anyway, and they may just ignore that in any event. So,
will this fall under the Commerce Act or anything, under, you know, international trade or anything? I mean, you're exchanging money, you know.
Well, the law only really impacts what it calls interstate transactions, so it's going to be lawful under the Commerce Act. There's not going to be subject to any commerce challenge, I don't suspect. But the question is that I think that the WTO, their position on this all along, even before the act was actually passed, is that if it did pass, it would be in violation of numerous international agreements. You know, this is not my area of expertise, but it's at least their position that we can't pass a law like this, and they may try to do something about it, but that to me seems like at best a long shot. I don't see anything coming of it. The international community is certainly not happy about it. It seems sort of like a protectionist law to me. I mean, they're trying to keep some of these foreign jurisdictions and their companies from making money from U.S. customers. It's basically protectionism, and it's not probably a good practice, but as some of the callers today have suggested, it may be that Senator Frist is being influenced by some people who maybe have a long-term view in mind, and they want to be able to, I mean, billions are being made from U.S. customers. It may be that some of these lawful U.S. casinos think, you know what, we want a piece of this, and the only way to get it at this point is to put some of these places out of business and come in later, maybe in a couple of years.
And get it legalized here.
Right.
Regulated in the U.S. Rich, got to go. Got a place. Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Jeff, what we're going to do here is I'm right up against the top of the hour. I'm going to play my commercials, and I'm going to let you make your closing statement to us, okay?
Sure.
I appreciate it so far, folks. We're going to listen to our commercials right now, and I'll be right back. You're listening to the Saturday's special with Vernon.
Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody. If fear is preventing you from seeing the dentist, listen to how we've helped others with sedation dentistry.
Hello, I'm Pat. I've had probably 40 years of dental drama and trauma, and usually I would go in for a dental procedure only when it was an emergency. Probably had about a dozen different dentists. None of them were painless. I would quit. I wouldn't follow up my procedures, and it would lead from one disaster to another. I would highly recommend Dr. Peabody to anybody that has any tension or apprehension about a dentist. He's the man, and I'm a true believer.
We've helped hundreds of people wake up to a beautiful smile. Let us help you, too.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You, too, can wake up to a beautiful smile.
This is Sam Farr, and I've approved this message because too many people are getting cut out.
Cut out of home ownership, health coverage, a good education. Sam Farr says it's time to fight back.
In Washington, the attitude now is to help the wealthy and forget about the rest.
A massive sellout to special interests, and that makes Sam Farr mad.
Ever since my days in the Peace Corps, I've always believed that government's there to provide opportunity for the people who need it.
Not charity, not handouts, opportunity. Sam Farr sees it as an investment in our future.
Give people access to the American dream, a chance at a good education, an affordable place to live, a decent reward for hard work.
That's why we need to keep Sam Farr in Congress, standing up to the powerful, speaking out for the people. Find out more about Sam Farr's fight at friendsoffarr.org.
This battle's never over.
This message paid for by Friends of Farr.
Have you done your spring cleaning? Every so often, it's good to clear out the cobwebs and start fresh, whether it's your environment or your body. Yes, our bodies can benefit from a good cleanse. Poor eating habits, active stressful lifestyles, environmental toxins, all can make us feel lethargic and less than our sparkling best. Youngevity's Ultimate Cleanse FX, Majestic Earth Herbal Rainforest, and Premium Cleansing Herbs are your solutions for occasional gentle cleansing of the digestive system, elimination of toxins, and maintenance of healthy intestinal flora. It even helps your body better absorb your nutritional supplements. So if you're feeling a bit draggy and not your best, try the gentle cleansing aids from Youngevity products. You'll feel better. Call me, Sophie Winnick, at 335-3216 for more information. That's 335-3216. Talk to you soon.
Climb a mountain, fish a stream, hike a trail, live your dream, play a sport, ski a slope or lake. We get outdoors for adventure's sake. Outdoor World gives you for adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
Outdoor enthusiasts know that the best clothing works equally well in the backcountry or the backyard. We carry jackets and vests, fleece or down, silk thermal sweats, and lots more. You could say our fall clothing is where urban styling meets out in the middle of freaking nowhere performance.
Rapids is never boring. Set up camp and go exploring around the campfire when day ends with your family or friends. Outdoor World gives you more adventure. Outdoor World outfits you with pride. Outdoor World knows the fun you're in for. Outdoor World for the great outside.
Okay, folks, back here with you on the Saturday special. Jeff, we got 4 minutes to go here. Why don't you just take us on home? What would you have to say about all that, this, if you're going to tie it all together?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the sentiment I've seen on the internet is that the act is not very effective. It's not like it'll have any impact. I think that, I mean, that was what I saw when it was first passed. I think what we've seen in the past week or so is that, unfortunately, the act is pretty effective and its goal is likely to be accomplished if its goal is to limit or possibly eliminate internet gambling. And unfortunately, the political situation that caused it is unfortunate, but it's one where we can only really look back and try to figure out what went wrong as far as that goes. Now we have to deal with the actual act itself. I would only advise everyone, if anyone is getting any income as a result of what could be perceived as unlawful internet gambling, they need to be extremely careful based on this new act. I'm somewhat hopeful that internet gambling is not going to be extinguished by the act. There's still going to be, I'm hopeful particularly that poker will still exist online in some form. But I have some real honest concerns that it may not exist much longer. I'm hopeful that the Justice Department will take a reasonable interpretation of the act and that they won't. Hopefully, I'm of the opinion that they probably have better ways to spend their money as far as
our money.
Possible, yeah, our money. I'm sorry. As far as national security goes, we've got issues. We've got issues as far as drug trade. There's tons of issues that the federal government can be concerned with. Unfortunately, I think this administration has taken a liking to pursuing gambling as an issue, and I'm hopeful that they will, at least have some moderation in that regard and not pursue some of these sites and try to throw some of these people in jail, because, frankly, I feel like it's not a good use of resources. But I'm also hopeful, too, that at least in the next few years, hopefully, they will realize that restricting internet gambling is probably not possible entirely. And I'm hopeful that it will, at least in some form, we will have regulation that will take hold. Congress will pass some sort of regulation of internet gambling. We'll have some legitimate U.S. companies getting involved, hopefully some big casinos.
That's what Vegas wants anyway. The American gambling industry wants it regulated and wants to get into the business.
Right. And at that point, maybe we could impose some sort of loss limits to keep people from getting too out of hand with it and maybe even figure out a way to eliminate some problem gamblers from the site, and make sure that, you know, the people are of age when they're gambling. Because as it sits right now, I have some concerns as to the age verification on some of these sites. You know, if the U.S. government gets involved and regulates it, there would be legitimate penalties for, you know, taking bets from anyone that's under 21. We can implement that. We can implement lots of things. We can make sure everything's safe. And it would be a huge, huge revenue maker for federal government.
Jeff, I'm going to suggest to you that the law of unintended consequences that's going to come out of this is that internet gambling will be bigger than ever, and within the United States within the next 10 years, regulated. And for people that didn't want to see internet gambling, they're going to be sorely disappointed, because we have our own special interest groups in the United States, and the problem they thought they're going to rid us of is only going to grow. That's my prediction.
You could well be right.
And I thank you for your time. I really appreciated it. We're out of time for today. I will be emailing you. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and thanks.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Folks, you've been listening to the Saturday Special with Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube. Stay tuned for Perspectives. You're listening to KSCO in Santa Cruz.
That's all, folks.
The U.N. Security Council approving a resolution drafted by the U.S., a response to North Korea's claims it conducted an underground nuclear test earlier this week. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations John Bolton pleased with the resolution, calling it necessary.
The proclaimed test of a nuclear device by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea unquestionably poses one of the gravest threats to international peace and security that this council has ever had to confront.
The initial U.S. proposal, watered down during discussions this morning at the request of Russia and China, left out a complete ban on shipments of conventional weapons. Materials that could be used to manufacture missiles or nuclear weapons are banned. North Korea saying it will consider any additional U.S. pressure an act of war and totally rejects the resolution. North Korea and its nuclear program, the focus of the president's weekly radio address, President Bush saying there is much more work to be done.
In response to North Korea's provocation, we will seek to increase our defense cooperation with our allies, including cooperation on ballistic missile defense to protect against North Korean aggression, and cooperation to prevent North Korea from importing or exporting nuclear or missile technologies.
Pennsylvania congressional candidate Patrick Murphy delivering the Democratic response, saying the administration needs to fight a different war on terror, and it's not in Iraq.
We need to implement all of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. We need to capture and kill Osama bin Laden. And above all, we need to start bringing our troops home from Iraq and refocus on the real war on terror.
A U.S. airman killed in Iraq today. You're listening to Fox News Radio, Fair and Balanced.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbe. Did you know that every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
As the House Ethics Committee investigates the Foley Page scandal, comes word that another former congressman embroiled in a similar scandal has died, Jerry Studs of Massachusetts.
Studs became the first openly gay member of Congress after being caught up in the 1983 congressional Page scandal, the Massachusetts Democrat implicated for having sex with a teenage male Page. While there were calls at the time for his expulsion, the Democratic House leadership compromised, giving Studs a censure, which cost him his chairmanship of a House Merchant Marine subcommittee, but left him in Congress. He served five more terms, eventually being made the chairman of the committee.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz, Studs, died from a blood clot in his lung. He was 69. The family of a University of Vermont co-ed who went missing 1 week ago today, now planning her funeral.
It was the news that the family of the missing college student was hoping they wouldn't receive. The body of 21-year-old University of Vermont student Michelle Gardner Quinn was found in Vermont near a popular swimming site. Police say they do have a chief suspect in custody. That man is Brian Rooney, 36 years old from Vermont. He was arrested yesterday on unrelated charges to Michelle's disappearance and kidnapping. Those charges are sexual assault and lewd and lascivious conduct with a child. The investigation, police say, is still ongoing. There is a press conference expected for later this afternoon. In Burlington, Vermont, Rena Ninen, Fox News Radio.
Police still searching for a suspect in the brutal shooting deaths of a Florida couple and their two young children. The four found riddled with bullets by the side of the Florida Turnpike yesterday.
We continue to follow leads in this investigation, and we are reviewing evidence from both the crime scene as well as the victims' homes last night.
St. Lucie Sheriff Ken Mascara, the family moving from Texas to West Palm Beach a few months ago. And nearly 300,000 still without electricity in the Buffalo area. Almost 2 feet of snow falling Thursday and Friday, the most ever recorded for October. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, October 14th, 2006. It looks like today you can expect the clouds to burn off, revealing mostly sunny conditions. High should be around 65 degrees and winds west-southwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, some clouds with lows around 50 degrees and winds west at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Today's Monterey Bay Boaters forecast, west winds becoming 5 to 10 knots in the afternoon, with wind waves up to 1 foot and a mixed swell west 2 to 4 feet at 10 seconds and south 2 feet at 15 seconds. The temperature here at the station is 60 degrees, and it's time for Perspectives with your host Donald Davidson right here on AM 1080 KSCO, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville.